Hello and welcome to the Middle East Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Panier, host of the Middle East and author of the Central Asia in Focus newsletter. Racialization is a problem everywhere in the world and has been a problem in Russia for many years, even during the days of the Soviet Union when the peoples of the country were supposedly fraternal and equal. There were negative stereotypes based on ethnicity. Recently, Russia has, however, been a source of employment and in some cases a better life for natives of Central Asia. Just a few years ago, unofficial estimates claimed up to 8 million citizens of Central Asian countries were working as migrant laborers in Russia, and conditions for many were hard. The situation for Central Asians in Russia is now becoming even more difficult than it was as the terrorist attack in Moscow in March, for which Russian officials blamed Tajik nationals, has sparked a wave of xenophobia across Russia, and Central Asians are often the target. To discuss all this, I am joined by Nadira Abdullayeva. She's a human rights specialist with legal background focusing on migrant workers' rights and the prevention of forced labor. Abdullayeva has provided legal aid to migrant workers and participated in drafting laws and policies on labor migration. She is now based in the Netherlands, where she consults for international organizations and NGOs and works part-time as a team leader at the Dutch Council for Refugees. Nadira Holmatova is a sociologist and postdoctoral researcher at the University of Amsterdam, researching return migration and deportation regimes and the impact of migration policies on migrants and their families. Her research areas focus on migration trajectories from Central Asia, and more recently, she's also been looking into the Western Balkans and Southeast Asia. Tolkun Umaraliyev is the chief editor for RFERL's Migrant Unit and Fergana Valley Bureau. Thank you all for being here today and joining me. Nadira Holmatova, if I could start with you. First, can you explain to me racialization? There's racism, but there's also racialization. So you can explain to me what that means and how it applies to Central Asians in Russia.
Salam, everyone. Thank you, Bruce, for bringing us together today in such a great company to talk about important observations and issues related to migration in Central Asia. It's a great question, and you might be also surprised that it's not used that often in the media or in research. So first, I want to say that racialization can vary depending on historical and cultural and geographic context. So when I write and I use racialization, I talk about it, racialization of Central Asians in Russia, and an example of migrants specifically, I refer to the process by which Central Asians are assigned racial identities and subjected to differential treatment followed by stereotypes, discrimination based on these perceived racial differences. What does it involve? It involves the process of categorizing people according to their physical characteristics, but even more importantly in this context, according to basically categorizing them according to national origins and cultural practices, and then ascribing certain behaviors, traits, or social roles to these people. So before I go into like bringing some examples, I will take a few minutes to emphasize two things when it comes to racialization. First, racialization and migrations are not new phenomenon, not just the events of the last 30 years when the Central Asian states got their independence, right? And second, when we talk about racialization of Central Asians in Russia, we need to be aware of that it's as a social construct. So historically, Russian state and society, through various institutions, policies, practices, not just created and assigned meaning to these racial categories, but also reinforced implementation and often through violence. So we all know, generally, right, historically, Central Asian populations underwent and as a result were shaped by many sociological, cultural, demographic, political, economic transformations as a result of Russian settler colonialism in the territory of current Central Asia. And the processes and practices of the social engineering, so-called modernization, extractivism of resources, reshaping the borders, and forced migrations for the purpose of agricultural economy. How do we know about all this? It's through research, of course. We sociologists, we do interviews with people in Central Asia whose life stories still document the experiences of their grandparents and their own experiences of childhood, growing up, studying, giving birth to their children, traveling and working in the Soviet Union. Although it's not a specific focus of our talk today, I would like to invite everyone to read works by Botokos Kasimbekova, Diana Kudaibergen, Erika Marat, Lucie Diren-Bergen. And also, if you want to know about the life of migrants in the Soviet times especially, please check the book Voices from the Soviet Age by Jeff Sahadeo, where he describes the discrepancy that we're actually going to talk about today more between the official policies and the reality of being a migrant from southern Soviet states, that is Central Asian Caucasus. So just to sum up, and our staff. Why is it important to talk about racialization today for all of us, right? Probably everyone among the audience who checks social media, reads news on Central Asia and Russia has seen images, headlines of how migrants are stuck at the airports, how their places of residence and work have been violently raided by the police, people being illegalized and deported. Recently, even the chief of police of Moscow said they want to make Moscow white again by cleansing the streets of the migrants. These racialized actions and discourse is not news for us, for those who study migration. So while racial categories, they do change over time, for example, now being a migrant has a very extreme negative connotation, the racialization of Central Asian migrants, continues to have significant social, economic, and political consequences, shaping the experiences of several generations of people in both host and home societies. So just to load you with some numbers, as we talk through this topic today, I want you to have these numbers in your head. We talk about millions of people. With 11.6 million foreign-born residents, Russia is the third largest destination for migrants worldwide. Around 50% of the migrants come from Central Asia. And more importantly, migrants bring enormous revenue to the state budget. For instance, in 2022, 32 billion rubles, that's roughly $350 million, were transferred into the city budget of Moscow in taxes from work permits. So I want you to have these numbers in the back of your head as we talk about the application of racialization, experience of racialization of Central Asians. And I can name basically three or four key aspects for discussion. First of all, the stereotyping and prejudices against migrants as unskilled laborers, criminals, culturally incompatible, renting only to Slavic people, right? Which is a bit similar in the US. There are Latino migrants are often racialized as illegal immigrants or undocumented workers, right? Regardless of their actual legal status. Another area of application is institutional discrimination, which is my favorite area of application because you see a lot of racialized bias, employment policies, housing policies, such as, for example, in Samara region recently, they adopted that migrants cannot work in the food service in terms of like cooking, providing like cafes, restaurants, right? In another region, migrants cannot be taxi and public transport drivers, for example, right? Limiting their rights based on the fact that they're migrants from Central Asia mostly, right? Another important application of the racialization we can see at the intersection with nationalism and xenophobia, such as portraying migrants as a threat to the cultural, economic, social fabric of Russia, which leads to these biased policies that further exclude and marginalize people. Another important area is the impact on migrant identity, because migrant population from Central Asia is not a homogeneous group. It's not only men, it's women, it's children, it's a couple of generations who have lived there for decades. They have established their life. They go back and forth. It's a translational migration. It's a permanent migration. It's various types of migration involved in this process. And then this huge population is affected by racialization. And we need to talk about the belonging, where they belong. Do they belong to Central Asia or Russia and why, right? So their identities depend on this kind of practices and experiences. And the last area of application is the political and social consequences of racialization of migrants in Russia, meaning about the political representation of Central Asian migrants worldwide. Right. Especially as you mentioned in the beginning, as a result of the recent attack, right? The perception of the Central Asians changed, especially Tajikistani migrants, changed immediately. And also it shapes the public attitudes. So I'll stop here. And I'm sure the colleagues have a lot more to add to this.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. And of course, I encourage anyone, if you want to add some comments or ask some questions, then please jump right in when you have the chance. Nadira Abdullayeva, you work with migrants' rights. I'm wondering, how does this perception, this racialization, I mean, how does it influence the rights of migrant laborers in Central Asia? And we'll save what's happening now for a few minutes, but in the last 15 years, 20 years, how does racialization in Russia influence the rights and conditions of Central Asian migrant laborers there?
Thank you, Bruce. To be honest, the term racialization, it's not a commonly used, term among, legal practitioners. And I never have seen this term in legal documents concerning migrants or human rights. Instead, terms like discrimination, racial profiling, or systematic racism, they are more frequently applied if we talk about, you know, legal acts. And if you look to the national legislation in Central Asian countries or even Russia. Therefore, as I already mentioned, the legal discourse among the practitioners, particularly specialists and lawyers in Central Asia, we are, you know, generally focused on discrimination and racial discrimination and xenophobia. And now, after the explanation that Notira gave us, I think racialization is a huge process and it has a lot of elements. And what we lawyers talk about and discuss about, it's mostly about the outcomes of it, because we talk about, you know, human rights violations, discrimination, xenophobia, and these kind of concepts. Nodira, you can please, if I understand it not in a correct way, you can add something, because I think it's really important to understand this concept for people like me. You know, we are not academia, we are practitioners. So this is my first reaction for the explanation of racialization.
I'm happy to jump in and just say that it's exactly what it is. So in research, what I do, I look at the social practices of people, what people go through at the entry point, when they arrive at the country, right? When they leave in the country, when they, reside in the country, when they leave the country, right? And by looking at my interviews, I found a lot of commonalities to what people go through. And there's a lot of racialization that is systematized. Basically, people have to learn the Russian language. People have to learn the Russian history. And even through this process, there's a lot of violence involved, the way people are treated. And they're almost as have even don't have half the rights as the local citizens. Even those Tajik and Uzbek and Kyrgyz and Kazakh who have the citizenship of Russia, they don't really enjoy the rights of the same as the Russians, right? Because system is designed in a way to remind them that they don't belong there. Their place is temporary there. They came for work only there, while people have been residing there for three decades. They have grandchildren growing up only speaking Russian, for instance, right? And yet these people are profiled on the streets as Central Asians, right? And once their rights being violated, the police comes and profile them. And now they don't even ask for documents. They immediately take them to the police station. They will say, we're going to deport you, right? Only then they start taking their documents. So when these kind of precarious situations happen, it's really hard for them to be treated as a respected citizen or respected foreign citizen visiting Russia or working in Russia, right? And first of all, there's a lot of informality and corruption involved in the process. So there's a lot of literature on describing, explaining how migrants navigate, how Central Asians who don't even go for labor migration, they just go to, you know, like visit tourism, medicine, medical reasons, other reasons, right? They face this. I've been there doing research. I face the same issues. So for them, it doesn't matter what is the purpose of your visit. For them, what matters, what the system, the way the system perceives you, you came from Central Asia. Right. So when they end up in these precarious situations, lawyers, human rights lawyers, NGOs that work there, they go in support, right? And then they rescue them, so-called, to say, or they bribe their way out. They pay for the police officer and let them go. But it's everyday reality for the people, for men, women, for children, right? And imagine coping with this on daily basis as you go to work, as you go from work, as you go to take your kid from the kindergarten, etc., right? Navigating the space, such a big city as Moscow. Migrants don't learn a way to go for leisure or entertainment. They know the metro station names, how to get from work to home, etc. At least among my respondents, the last day before going back home, among the seasonal labor migrants especially, they only one day devote to checking the Red Square, for example, and then they go home, right? That's just one segment of the migrant population, but there are others. So I hope I just give the details, and Nodira, maybe we can jump in and choose one scenario that she's the most common among the legal violations.
Okay, great. Thank you. Tokun, I got to, oh, Nodira, you want to make a comment? Nodira Abdullaeva?
Bruce, I want to talk about how, you know, from a legal perspective, how I see this, but maybe it's better if you will ask questions and then I will reorganize all the thoughts. So, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get back to that. Absolutely. In just a second. But I want to bring Tolkun in. And Tolkun, you've been, I mean, your project with the migrant laborers has been on for several years. What I was hoping is if you could paint a picture of us, what it was like for a migrant laborer in Central Asia, in anywhere in Russia, a Central Asian migrant laborer working in Russia, you know, 2 years ago, that were before the Krokus City Hall attack. But what was it like for migrant laborers? And you've spoken to the migrant laborers all over Russia in different cities. So can you give us kind of a small portrait of the average migrant laborer's life, construction worker, street sweeper, whatever?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me in this podcast. The podcast I enjoy a lot, one of the few ones in English language on Central Asia. And glad to be with this in the strong panel, I think, on migration. So I wouldn't even maybe go back to just the start, the timeline from the concert hall attack in Moscow. I mean, if you look back at the history of migration in Russia and into the xenophobia in Russian society in general, as colleagues said, both Nadira Halmatova and Nadira Abdullayeva, the problem, the core of the issue has been there for many years. It's not new. Migrants from Central Asia in Russia have been vulnerable for the entirety of their time in Russia since the very first days of them traveling to Russia, even before that. We've seen an increase in xenophobia, in targeted discrimination of Central Asian labor migrants after the full scale, the start of the full scale invasion of Ukraine by Kremlin, by Russia. Because it started with the forced conscription, forced enlistment to military in prisons where many Central Asian labor migrants serve sentences, and also in the places where labor migrants from Central Asia live and work. We've seen cases, we've reported on cases of forced enlistment to Russian military. And we've seen many cases where migrants were lured with the promise, sometimes empty promise, of money and easy pass to Russian citizenship. But yes, you're right. The concert hall attack in Moscow in March this year has given a huge push to the increase of persecution and xenophobia against migrants in Russia, especially against migrants from Tajikistan, as several people were arrested in relation to the Krokus City Hall attack. I think 4 people were arrested in the beginning, then several other suspects were named. I think even yesterday or the day before, authorities published another 5 names of Central Asians that were allegedly linked to the attack. So after the attack, we've seen a huge increase in every possible thing you can name against migrants. It's the discrimination. It's the arbitrary detentions. It's the deportations. There have been massive cases of not letting people into Russia on the land borders, in the airports. Lots of hundreds of, if not thousands, migrants from Tajikistan being stranded for days in the borders. And it coincided with the spring season, you know, because in spring, usually, we see an increase in migration flows to Russia from Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Kyrgyzstan, because during the winter season, some migrants tend to return back to their countries for rest and for different reasons. And in spring, most of them go back to Russia. So we've reported about many cases of people not being allowed into Russia. It's and xenophobia in general also. We've seen increased attacks against migrants by local population, by nationalist groups. We see also a surge in the number of people who are becoming members of different nationalistic groups on Telegram channels. And also the other thing is that the so-called war veterans in Russia, the people who served in Russian army and participated in the war in Ukraine, And Russia keeps calling the war in Ukraine, its war efforts in Ukraine, as SVO, special military operation. So the veterans of this military, so-called military operation, when they're coming back to Russia after the having served in the army in Ukraine, they're increasingly joining these nationalistic groups. And the recent trend we see is that these groups are being embedded to police and to National Guard when patrolling the streets and raiding markets and other places where migrants work. And these nationalistic groups are being given carte blanche, basically, in some places, to openly attack, arrest, humiliate Central Asian migrants in the places where they live and they work. And unfortunately, also based on the migrants' testimonies who speak to us, and also based on the UGC content, user-generated content that we're receiving from different regions of Russia, we see local support in such actions. We don't see, locals defending migrants or going against the actions of this former military and police. That's the sad reality of Russia right now. There may be different other explanations to this. Maybe Nadira, as an academician, could also help us to explain it a bit more detailed way, maybe. But the experts we've spoken to also say that by increasingly targeting migrants, also on a state level, on a legislative level, and on local levels like this, Russian authorities are trying to divert, people's attention from local issues, local problems, other problems also related to the Russia's war efforts in Ukraine, to migrants. So they're scapegoating migrants, and they're funneling the public anger towards them. And we've seen that in the past in many other countries as well in history. If this is a case, unfortunately, it's working. We see an increased public negative attitude towards Central Asians across the country. And this is being fueled by everybody, by state institutions, by government-controlled media, and by different, this like so-called vigilante nationalistic groups. Just to sum up, it's become quite difficult to be a migrant, a Central Asian person in Russia. We have never, in the past, we have never seen actually a period like this for Central Asians in Russia, for a prolonged period like this. It's been lasting for several months now, where it's been quite difficult for them to live and work in Russia.
Okay, thank you. Dendiri?
May I say a few things before Nadira will give us, this academic overview of the topics, because when I was listening to Tolkun, I was really, I really agree with him that now the situation with migrants from Central Asia, the violation of their human rights, it become more obvious. It become, more scaling, after the Krakow City Hall. Because before, I'm agree with Tolkun, I also working with migrants, for more than 15 years. And I see that all the time when any, diplomatic scandal, we remember about 2011, this case of when, Nadira, я забыла слово летчики. Can you help me, Nadira? Yeah, pilots. Thank you. The case of pilots. And after this, we had also these diplomatic tensions and COVID-19. And all the time it was, at the end, we had cases when the situation of migrant workers from Central Asia were deteriorating, were worsening. But indeed, after Krakow City Hall, we can see that now it's more scaling. Now it's more obvious. And especially social media and media, it shows how it's, become worsened. And not only worsened, but also we see now it's institutionalized, because we can see how after March, all the Russian legislation, you know, they start to revise it. They start to make changes on this legislation. And we know the latest discussions, we know that, for instance, Russia plans to ban the entry for migrants' family members. Although we know that family members of migrant workers never were welcomed in Russia, and it was really difficult for them to regularize their status. But now it's not clear what will happen with them, because they already, you know, mentioned that it will be there will be changes here. And also, I think last week I saw in media also the news about that all children of migrant workers now they will. Or maybe it was a proposal that it will be mandatory examinations for migrant children who want to go to school in Russia. So we know that officially the Russian Ministry of Education, it acknowledged that this is contradicts to the constitution of Russia, and they don't want to do this. But we don't know how it will really be at the end. And in practice, if we will follow the media, we see that there are already, you know, cases when schools are not really ready to accept children, as they say here. I just will use the term they use, children with migration history. So at least I haven't time to read the proposal that it's already provided to the government of Russia. But in media, we already see that how it's, you know, how it's the consequences of this Russianization. Thank you.
If I can add to this, Bruce, to the tests for children of migrants from Central Asia in Russia, we also have reported several recent cases when, even though, you know, Ministry of Education of Russia is initially, you know, proposed this this idea of you know, nationwide rule of testing children of migrants before they enrolled to Russian schools, but then they abandoned this because they found it to be against the human rights. But despite that, we see in several regions of Russia schools by their own decisions testing Russian language skills of migrants' children and not allowing them to be enrolled to schools just because they may speak bad Russian, and they're using it as an excuse not to, you know, to deny them access to education in general. They're not just, you know, proposing something else, for example, like additional language courses, you know, to elevate their language skills. No, we see this cases where they're just blatantly being, you know, denied of access to education, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you for bringing that up and putting that in, because I think part of that proposal, if I remember right, it reads something like they want children in school that share traditional Russian values or something. There's part of it that hints at that, which is or come from backgrounds of traditional Russian values or something. You know, I want to give everyone their publicity and remind that we're talking about racialization in Russia that targets Central Asians. And my guests are Nadira Kholmatova, a sociologist and postdoctoral researcher at the University of Amsterdam, researching return migration and deportation regimes and the impact of migration policies on migrants and their families. Tokun Amoraliyev, he's chief editor for RFERL's Migrant Unit and Fergana Valley Bureau. And Nadira Abdullayeva, a human rights specialist with a legal background focusing on migrant workers' rights and prevention of forced labor. And Nadira Abdullayeva, or Nadira Kholmatova, we'll start with you. I'm curious, you know, if I'm a migrant in Central Asia, you do migrant rights. If I'm a migrant in Central Asia and I've been the victim of just a common crime, you know, my employer didn't pay me, somebody hit my car, something like that. Now, you know, what are the chances that I'm going to be able to go in and get a...
So, may I start, Nadira?
Of course, it's your area.
Okay, I will start. So, if it would happen, you know, maybe in 2015, then Bruce, I think you, if you're a Tajik migrant living in Dushanbe, you can come to Tajik Human Rights Center, and then we will start to work with your case. And in that time, I think we would have, you know, our partner organization in Russia, and then maybe we could help you at that time. But now it's different. Now it's really impossible to protect, because first of all, if we talk on the example of Tajikistan, it's very important to mention that because of many things, because of also, you know, shrinking the space for the NGOs in Tajikistan, there are less NGOs who really works on human rights and who can provide protection. And also, if we talk about Russia, you know, the situation in Russia, there are also, you know, most of our ex-partners whom we worked, they are now agents, and they also not are working very, you know, successfully with the human rights cases. So in short, the answer is that now it's really impossible if you are a migrant from Central Asia to provide you access to justice. And here I can remember the case, maybe all of you are aware about this case. The name of this case in media was Galyanova slaves case. It was in 2017-18. It was a group of migrants from Central Asia who were in a situation, not only forced labor, but really they were in a slave condition. And Russian NGO, Civic Assistance, they did amazing, great job helping migrants from Central Asia with this case. And then that case was, the application was sent to European Court on Human Rights. And we all, you know, practitioners were really eager and waiting to see how the European Court will work on this application. But unfortunately, you know that after 2020 and what is going on in Russia after Ukraine invasion, so now there is not any human rights, and the European Court on Human Rights is not, you know, anymore considering cases from Russia. So therefore, sum up my answer, I can say that it's really difficult to protect migrants from human rights violation in Russia. Still, there are some, you know, NGOs who can do something, but not at the scale that we had before, the opportunities or options we had before.
May I add something?
Yes, please.
Also, just to add on personal level, right? I'm a researcher, there's a lawyer, there are journalists here in the room. Observing, studying, being part of this process, it's a lot of, you observe a lot of violence, right? So Nadira was super right pointing at, right now, Russia is a lawless state, a lawless country that where laws are applied, it's selectively applied. The country kicked out or deported all the human rights lawyers. They used to work with migrants. There are no human rights organizations left. That's why what is left for migrants is to call back home to Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, or Kyrgyzstan to the lawyers there, asking them what to do, help me, right? How should I protect my rights? What should I do, right? And the second option strategy would be to bribing their way out, right? Again, it's decided on individual base-to-base case where you don't have laws, right? If you're not paid, normally in Europe, you would go to your employer, make a complaint, or to the union, or to the police at the end of the day. There, who do they refer to? It's a big question, right? And it's not just for employment, for housing, for medical issues, right? It's a whole spectrum of social life that people need and depend on, right? And those rights are limited and violated, right? And I don't want to be dramatic because we talk about the important issues that we're talking about. But at the same time, we observe that people are still going back to Russia. I recently closed in August 3 times the border between Uzbekistan and Tajikistan because I needed to go to Tashkent. And I observe people, 3 generations, grandchildren, children and parents, right? Young children who got their children, right? 3 generations going by bus to Surgut, to Yekaterinburg. So in spite of all the violence that we're talking about, people are still going, right? So that's why I'm saying that we are observing a horrifying reality, right? Of violence of people. And we all come from Central Asia here. So we have relatives, friends, etc. So something that we study, that we work on, becomes very personal for us as well. So it's not an easy topic to even talk about, right? And another thing is that these processes, thank you so much to Tolko and Nadira sharing all these examples and processes they've been observing and working with, right? Because these processes of illegalizing people, the moment you violated, like you didn't pay the fine or your registration is one day late, right? In the past, you could go pay the fine. Oh, there will be a court and a hearing. Right now, you're immediately sent to police, right? Let's say, or you're disposed in a way by being part of this deportation regime that Russia is using, right? They even now catching people on the street and telling them you either be deported or you go to war, for example, right? So, official procedures are being used and violated for the purpose of this state that is at war, right? For whatever purposes they need the people. So migrants represent a huge human resources that can be used for different purposes. And the way it's done is through structured systematic violence towards people, and which is, if you think about it, it's millions of people, right? And their future is under risk. So it's a big issue. And this process of illegalizing migrants, the moment they overstay their visas or they overstay their permits, their work permit is expired, right? They're even using these instruments, not giving them driver licenses on time, right? So waiting for this violation to happen so they can sneak in another offer, let's say, to wait to use the migrants, right? So it has been strategizing, technologies, right, to use migrants for different purposes that we need to be aware of. So it's not just violation of the rights, but it's made on purpose to the structure that we need to talk about more and more, right? So we don't only talk about the migrants who go through these horrific experiences, but we have to talk about the system that puts them in this position, that get precarious and violated regardless of how long they've been in Russia, right? Any documents can be expired, boom, they are disposed. They are being either deported, and the person have never been to Tajikistan in the last 3 decades. Like, he goes back, he has nothing there, right? Like, these are crazy situations, but they do take place. And then this process of deportation is the humanizing process, right? Now you see people being stuck at the airports for days without food and water, and you observe this, and this is the reality of many migrants, right? And at the same time, there's other reality that coexists. People still have weddings there. People have continued their life there, right? So it's not very straightforward and linear way of explaining what's going on, because these things coexist at the same time. And the last thing I wanted to say, what Russia is employing right now with its policies and practices is nothing new. UK had the same system. They used to have a hearing and jailing migrants who violated their stay, etc. Eventually, they realized it's too expensive to fund this kind of procedure. Now, deportation came in hand, deporting people in a week or a couple of days, right, depending on the country. So so countries do copy each other when it comes to migration policies. So the role of the human rights lawyers, the role of the voices of the journalism, of research is very important, right, to kind of counterface that. And I'm really glad we get to discuss these topics today.
Bruce, can I jump in very quickly?
Please do.
Nadira mentioned the lack of help, legal help, assistance to Central Asian migrants, to migrants in general in Russia after the start of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine by Russia, and due to the new laws that Russia adopted on foreign agents, on undesirable organizations, and because of that, many NGOs, many activists, human rights activists, had to leave the country or cease their operations because they've been receiving funds from international donors, and they became foreign agents, it wasn't safe for them to stay in Russia anymore. So this increased the vulnerability of Central Asian migrants in Russia, that's for sure. Before, they had different organizations, people who they used to contact immediately whenever something happened. For example, one of the well-known activists was Valentina Chupik and her organization Tong Jahani, and she was known for replying to messages of migrants even at 2 a.m. because they would write to her, all the time about them being arrested, harassed, or anything. And she would immediately, in most of the cases, start, counseling them through WhatsApp or other channels like Telegram. Now they're not in the country. It's the circle, of help inside Russia for migrants has shrinked as never before. And I just want to add the media perspective to this. The same with media, unfortunately. A lot of media organizations, local independent media organizations in Russia that used to report quite often on the persecution of migrants, on arbitrary detentions, discrimination of migrants by authorities across Russia, they also had to close their operations, or they had to move their operations to outside Russia, or shrink their operations because their funding was not enough for them anymore. I'm talking now about Novaya Gazeta, talking about Meduza, Dozhd, and others. In media, we see we also see less coverage, unfortunately, of issues of migrants. Even though the issues of migrants have increased significantly, as we said already. And I can also add, you know, and as an anecdotal evidence, how we have to work, how the migrant unit that Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty established 1.5 years ago has to work now, especially after our company, Radio Free Radio Liberty, was designated as an undesirable organization inside Russia. We have to inform now migrants who want to speak to us in the first place, who've contacted us themselves with their issues, with their problems. We now have to inform them before they start giving their information to us that we are an undesirable organization in Russia. And for sharing information with an undesirable organization, they may face consequences and persecution from Russian authorities. Imagine a person is already in a quite vulnerable situation, right? They're facing persecution, they're facing discrimination left and right from authorities, from locals, from their employers, and etc. They want to share their story with media, and they've heard about migrant media project, migrant unit project of RFL. They contact us, and they hear that, you know, for speaking to us, you may be even more persecuted. You may find yourself in a bigger problem than you are right now. Lots of people, unfortunately, in such cases, they refuse to speak to us, even though they reached out to us in the first place themselves. So that's the another side, the media aspect of this. So the increasing, you know, dictatorship, authoritarianism in Russia, the shrinkage of civil society and free media and free speech, unfortunately, is also impacting a lot Central Asian migrants because they're not receiving help as they used to do in the past, and their plights, their issues are not being that widely covered as before.
Okay, thanks. Tokun, let me just ask you one quick follow-up question. I'm curious. You know, Kyrgyzstan is a member of the Eurasian Economic Union. It's the only, you know, Uzbekistan is not and Tajikistan is not. But under the terms of the being a member of the Eurasian Economic Union, Kyrgyz workers are supposed to enjoy the pretty much the same rights almost as Russian workers. I mean, it's free passage into the country. They get medical care, they get pensions, all kinds of stuff. Is any of that being respected? Is there any evidence that for Kyrgyz citizens, they're honoring some of these terms since they're in this EEU, or are they being treated just like everybody other, or any other citizen of Central Asia?
Yeah, right. So Kyrgyz citizens enjoy a bit more legal, you know, rights, I would say, in Russia, comparing to migrants from Uzbekistan or Tajikistan. For example, they are not required to receive work permits, patente, work patents to be able to work legally inside Russia, which is also quite, you know, corrupted institution in itself, the labor patents. But talking about xenophobia and discrimination in general, they face equal pressure from the society, from employers, from authorities. Also, we've seen, for example, the latest report that we did, and we did series of reports because the academic year is starting on the access of education to migrant children. We reported about a group of migrant parents from Kyrgyzstan in Moscow whose kids were not allowed to school, you know, under different pretexts, and they gathered themselves in a WhatsApp chat, and they appealed to the Kyrgyz government for help. While covering this issue, we also contacted the Kyrgyz embassy in Moscow for comments. Later, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Kyrgyzstan responded saying that While such cases exist, they're not that widespread. But we know that, you know, we receive such cases, reports from across Russia. So I wouldn't say that they're not, the Kyrgyz migrants in Russia are not persecuted. But yeah, you're right. They enjoy a bit more legal freedom than migrants in from Tajikistan or Uzbekistan. But again, in terms of xenophobia, I would say it's the same. And just as an example also, you know, to show that it's not just actually Central Asian migrants who are being targeted in Russia, but also other ethnic groups who've been historically living inside Russia are also becoming becoming victims of xenophobia and discrimination. A recent outrageous case was with the story of a 21-year-old wrestler from Altai who moved several years ago to Novosibirsk to study in a sports school. She committed suicide, and in a suicide note on Telegram channel, she wrote that she's ending her life because of the hazing and xenophobia, as she was not Russian. So it's unfortunately it's xenophobia is targeting more than just migrants, and in this case migrants they do not, you know, look at the passports, Tajik, Kyrgyz, Uzbek. It affects everybody.
Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, we're running close to the end of the show, but I want to give everyone a few minutes to talk about whatever they think is most relevant. I couldn't possibly get in all the address all the topics and subjects that there are in the program. So if you could take 3 or 4 minutes, each of you, and say what you want to say about racialization, racism in Russia, and where it's going. And I'll start with you, Nadira Abdullayeva.
Thank you, Bruce. Yeah, you know, while listening to Tolkun and Nadira, I was also, you know, thinking that for sure, countries of origin, countries, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, they all need to think about what to do, because with the continuing flow of labor migration from these countries to Russia, in short term, I don't think it will decrease significantly. And therefore, it becomes very important for our governments to review and adapt policies, first of all, and, this political will to regulate this process from the perspective, from the migrant-centric position. And especially if I will talk about Tajikistan, what I like noticing the last year, the last years, and my government of Tajikistan for sure needs to understand that the risk of violations of human rights of migrants in Russia will only increase. Especially Tajik citizens who have Russian citizenship, they will be at risk of being, you know, drawn into the war in Ukraine. And Tajikistan for the last couple of years talking actively about diversification of migration to new destination countries. And these require really political will, strong political will. And it's, a lot of efforts, time need to be done to really diversify now migrants from Tajikistan to UK or to, to the Korean Republic and other countries. And also, it's also important for Tajikistan to understand that the risk of collective expulsion of migrants and mass detention remains, as we see, as a consequences of Crocus City Hall. And it means that the consular protection need to be, reorganized, and consular protection offices need to have kind of emergency plan. And also the last but not the least is that we also need to take into account, as Nadira said, that migrant, it's a, different group of people. We also need to take into account the position of women, because they are also in a, their position is more weak. Yeah, this is a couple of things I want to add to this discussion. Thank you.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much. Nadira Holmatova.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this talk today. And I was trying to think how to finish it. I think What worries me the most, like Nigeria said, there's already a lot of diversification going on, but the speed is not as fast, right? If you ask, if your the audience would ask why people are still going through this violence, right? The answer would be because they have established their life, right? They've been rooted there for generations, and it's really hard. They don't get up and go in 2 years, right? You have to figure out, right? And people have been receiving their pensions from Russia, right? There are pensioners, there are aging people there, the young people there. There's a lot of social groups that are involved in this. And for each of them, there are different trajectories that needs to be understood and considered, right? And what worries me the most, the fact that this violence, this treatment shapes identities of people, and being a migrant is now with a negative connotation as being like a bad person, horrible. It's dehumanizing the whole thing, like I said. And normalization of this process of people from Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan who experience this again, again, again. Quite often when I interview people, they don't regret, what they regret immediately is not that they were treated like that, but because they were caught and deported. So enduring this has been going on for decades already. It's not a new thing. It's not something of the, because of the war. It has been going on a lot for a long time. And people have been enduring. And like Tolkhon said, this is the worst time to be a migrant, to be a foreigner in Russia, right? I agree with that. But then people get, it gets normalized. People get used to it, right? So reproduction of this violence as something normal is, it's very worrisome as part of demographic change and sociological changes that we're going to see in coming years. And people react differently, of course. Some people return to Tajikistan, some people go back to their home countries, but eventually they have to go back because they have economic reasons, they have family reasons, right? Health reasons, etc. So things are changing, but the speed is not that fast. And as a result, because there's no legal support, there is no, financial support or anything for people, they are left on their own, basically, right? And this is very worrisome because it creates a lot of precarity. You might have heard in the news people going to the US via Mexico, right? Like, this is a lot of changes happening in terms of mobility of the people around the world. It's not just this trajectory that we are looking at as a result of this war as well, right? As a result of this violence and what's happening in Russia. I think I'll stop here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Tolkhon, you get the last word.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, a lot of important things have been said already. Just to add, something maybe that needs to be discussed maybe in another episode of the podcast, it's what's ahead. And I agree with Nadira that it looks like that in coming years, at least, things will not change for better for Central Asian migrants in Russia, for many different things, but also for the changing landscape of legislation in Russia, where the government is adopting more and more laws that tighten migration in general and create different loopholes and excuse for especially police on local levels for corruption and for arbitrary discrimination of migrants. For example, recently, Duma, Russian parliament, adopted a number of changes to different laws, which would, among other things, also create a registry of controlled persons, so-called, which would include foreigners that may have violated some rules and some laws, administrative laws, and it will be for the police to decide whether or not to include a foreigner to this registry of controlled person. And if the person is included into this registry, there will be additional, checks, additional limitations, and the person will not be able to travel far, and the person will not be able to drive a car, take a loan from banks, and many other things. Among one of the most controversial things that this new regulation, new laws involve is that now the police, it's been adopted by Duma, but not signed by president yet. But I think Putin will sign it soon. As far as we know, it's on his table, and if adopted, it will give police a right to deport foreigners without the decision of the court within 48 hours. So this again creates, gives create this atmosphere of lawlessness and of corruption. I believe the police will now have more power to just blackmail migrants, threatening them to be deported, you know, because they can take them to now detention centers for up to 48 hours, and they can decide within this time period whether or not to deport people. So given this legislation and overall attitude of the authorities towards migrants, who've been calling migrants many names, you know, many different names. I will not be naming them here, but we've never seen that before happening in Russia. And that's outrageous when you see that policymakers, quite high officials, religious people have been calling Central Asian migrants different names and scapegoating them on different vices. So unfortunately, in coming years, situation of foreigners, of Central Asian migrants in Russia, I think will get even worse. The work of academicians and lawyers like Nadira and media organization like ours, I think, will be even more important, because we need to keep documenting, reporting, and highlighting the issues of migrants and helping them.
Okay, great. Thank you, Tokun, and thank you, Nadira Abdullayeva and Nadira Holmatova. And a big thank you, as always, to our podcast producer, Majlis podcast producer, Nathan Shoemaker. And a reminder, you can subscribe to the Majlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thanks, and we'll be back soon.